better. I'm not sure why, but most of them made the 20%. This shows the code building, the design building, and then the actual operation is the last bar. So you can see in almost all cases, the actual performance is at least better than the code, with I think two exceptions: this Lane County building, which is still getting some bugs worked out, and there's some other issues with it, and this Kelly Engineering. But they're not always better than the design model shows. I'm going to look at that on the next slide a little more. But for instance, this project right here, Lane County, it's not necessarily a failure because the actual operation is so much higher than the code. Something that this building tried to do is it's mostly a vehicle maintenance shop. And they really had some aggressive criteria for it. They were going to heat the building, they were going to heat it to 50 degrees with radiant heat. You know, and the reality was the people, when the building was up and running, the people couldn't work in it. And they didn't want to work in it, and their union was behind them not working in it. And they had to up the heating to about, I think they wanted to go to 65, but I don't even think they had the capacity to do it. But they're keeping it significantly warmer than was shown in the building model. It doesn't mean it's not energy efficient. You know, 50 degrees was pretty aggressive. And as part of their procedures for, you know, getting this building in line, they probably need to recalibrate the model using the realistic temperature that was in there. This is just a table with that same information, but it's easier to see a few things with it here. You can see the red, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 out of the 20 buildings didn't make the 20% in the design. Three of them were real close, 19, 18, 19. One of them was not close, only 5% better. The best was this Fall Creek Hatchery at 56% better. And a lot of that savings was due to sort of, you might call it process load savings. They had some artificial streams for fish spawning, or yeah, I guess it's fish spawning. And they had to heat and cool them, and they put some efficient systems in there. I think they used a heat recovery chiller to both heat and cool the water simultaneously, which was not at all standard practice for that type of facility. So that's where a majority of that savings came from. Actual better than design. The red are showing energy use greater than what the design model showed, and the blue is energy use better. And we actually have 10 better, 10 worse. Then this last column is percent better than code, and you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 of them are not performing, didn't make the 20% better than code. Two of them, or three of them, this one, and this one, are actually performing worse than the code baseline. So that just kind of gives an overall snapshot of the 20 buildings that we've been through. Yep. We've already had some conversations with them about that. So we try and not come as a surprise. We try and get these bills, you know, during that whole 18-month period and even past, and try and work with them to get some things ironed out. I think the commissioning process in that building is finished now, but it hasn't been finished for that long. So we've been out and taken a look at the building. We need to go out there and take a look at it again, see what the trends are with the building. And you know, it's really, it's up to the individual agency, OSU in this instance, to come up with a plan, you know, part of which probably involves recalibrating the model and part of which involves going out there and making some fixes. But that's really hard to get them to do that. You know, the only hammer that we have really is a report to the legislature, you know, so when they're asking for money for their next building, it doesn't look very good. But and then the other hammer that we have is we also have the ability, they don't get a business energy tax credit if they don't meet the seed requirements, which actually is a pretty big hammer. It ends up that one is people pay much more attention to that one than the, you know, letter to the report to the legislature.
Mike, what's funny to talk about, can you speak for a minute on the building, why their model was 5% that they seem to achieve pretty good savings?
Let's go back and look, because I can't remember what their savings was. You know, Is that one of the ones you're talking about?
No.
I think maybe Glenn should answer that question since that was his project, and I think he has some ideas about that. Glenn, you want to say something about that, or you want to?
Well, I'm trying to get my mic on. How do I sound? Everybody got me? Okay. Well, I think what we need to do is compare it to other dorms. And if you go through there, the bottom line number is, what, 60,000, 59? Which is, you know, isn't excessive. And what happened on dorms, your code baseline is different than commercial buildings because it's residential. And so in a dorm, you've got to insulate it like it's your house. So your baseline is already lowered than if that building was one more story, they would have to, the code level would be less insulation.
So for instance, in a dorm, the wall insulation, if it's three stories or less, needs to be R21 instead of R13. The roof insulation needs to be R38 instead of R19. The windows need to be U value of 0.40 instead of 0.54. Big difference.
So, right. Less so there's a big difference in the loads of the building, just from how many stories the dorm was and your starting point. They did efficient measures. They had a condensing boiler for hot water loads and space heat. They put in a chiller. I think it was air cooled, not water cooled, because the loads were fairly small. So we felt that the review of the analysis, they did a comprehensive review, and that was the starting point.
So this is a case where you had the ability to say, it looks like they put in good measures and they're doing the right things, and model.
Right. And we actually did some parametrics. We went back and changed the building envelope to the commercial level, and it was closer to the 20% after we did that. Yeah.
So some, we talked about a few of these before, but why are there differences in the model and what the actual results are? Some of them aren't due to poor performance of the building. You know, one of the very first things is differences in weather. The weather that you use in a model is typical weather year data, TMY data. What actually occurs over the course of the year or the 18 months that we're looking at, it can be different. I don't think it makes that big a difference, but there can be some. I mean, in other words, I don't think the variation from typical over the course of a year is generally that great. But there is some variation, and that can be calibrated. You can calibrate your model for the actual weather for the year. The occupancy,
what
go ahead.
Is the typical model year taken from? Does it go back into the 20s?
It's an average, depending on the weather site, was it 40, 50 years or something like that?
Well, the latest one that I use, UC Berkeley puts out a normalized year, and the average, it's at least 10-year data from your city, the last 10 years or something, 10 years over the last 15 years, and then they take a look at it and they normalize that for a year, and they do not exclude peaks and, you know, really cold days or really hot days so that you would get proper peak loading and both for heating and cooling. So it's really not just a year. But, you know,
well, I wouldn't expect it to be just 1 year, but I wondered if they went back to the 20s.
So you see the trends. Are we getting warmer?
Yeah.
And right. Right. Yeah. So that's something that's important. The occupancy assumptions that we talked about are huge. You know, we've got some of these buildings that they build them, but then they don't have the money to put the equipment and the people in there, so they sit almost empty. And I think that might be going on with some of the areas in the vet school, although I'm not sure. But, you know, your energy use is going to look pretty darn good if nobody's using the building, even if they leave all the lights on, you know. Changes in controls, temperature set points, like in that Wayne County project, reset temperatures. We have a lot of projects where they reset supply air temperature. In the summer, in the wintertime, they'll raise the temperature. In the summertime, they'll lower the temperature for heating, the opposite for cooling. You know, if some spaces aren't meeting their loads, they'll abandon that strategy quickly. You know, what happens is the people that are running the buildings, they're less concerned usually with energy efficiency than they are with keeping the buildings running and keeping people in there happy. So a lot of times these measures like reset temperatures get overridden. Lighting that gets left on, you know, more often than people think they're going to have the light shut off at night oftentimes. But then we find out that janitorial staff is in there and they're in there, you know, doing, there's two people doing one room at a time and they come in and they turn all the lights on in the building, you know, and they leave them all on for the 6 or 8 hours that they're in there cleaning up. So, you know, maybe we try and implement some kind of a strategy where they're off and they only turn them on in the rooms that they're in. Submittal substitutions, you know, you can get a, during the submittal process, the person reviewing those submittals might not realize, you know, what's needed to make these ECMs effective. I mean, it can be something as simple as a contractor could put a submittal in to put a less efficient boiler in and give a cost savings back or something like that, or a trade-off, and somebody could approve it without really knowing the ramifications. There was one project that, you know, to me seems kind of interesting. It wasn't one of the projects I worked on, but a substitution request came in for glazing for a window product that had a higher shading coefficient. It was a little bit darker window. The architect said, yeah, that's fine. You know, a little bit darker is okay. We're going to have better energy performance because it's got a lower shading coefficient, not let as much radiation, solar radiation in there. Problem was it didn't let enough visible light in, so the daylighting strategy was compromised. You know, so that substitution request didn't work out very well because, you know, the whole integrated design process fell apart there. Value engineering, you know, when the project doesn't meet its budget, things disappear. Modeling errors, you know, they're very complex, these models. Nobody does it. It's impossible to model a building perfectly correct because you're making a lot of assumptions. And, you know, how accurately you make those assumptions and you capture the building really varies from modeler to modeler, and even the good modelers can make mistakes. And then there's ECMs that are in buildings that don't work. We see that with, you know, demand control ventilation. They've got the CO2 sensors in there, but they're not shutting the dampers down when nobody's in there, those kinds of things. Another one that really you wouldn't think about being a real problem, but we just have a heck of a hard time getting the data, the energy use data. And that's for a variety of reasons. We have meters that don't work or aren't calibrated, or maybe they're the wrong size. They put in meters that are so big they can't accurately gauge the load at low levels that these buildings are seeing. We've got metering plans that aren't carried through. There's nobody in the agency that's responsible for reporting the data. Sometimes we just get incorrect data, and we're trying to figure out ways to get around this issue. So now I got a bunch of pictures from out in the field showing some things that, you know, we've seen. You know, they're just kind of interesting things, and even in these high-performance buildings, why the results don't meet what was in the model. The actual conditions don't meet the design intent. This is a computer room air conditioner. The design intent for these rooms was 76 degrees, but yet it was set at 52 degrees, and there was a bunch of these. That 52 is the temperature, 99% is the humidity. And No, that's the room air, but I think the humidity sensor was wrong, was what the commissioning agent said about that. But it was 52 degrees in there. I was in there and it was very, very cold. And actually there's a story behind that. The reason that is like that, this building put in a heat recovery chiller. And there wasn't enough load on the chiller to supply the heat for the rest of the building. And I think they've gotten through this, they fixed this problem. But during the first few months of the building, in order to supply heat for the building, they had to lower the temperature in these computer rooms down to 52 degrees so they could generate enough heat to keep people warm in the rest of the building. But you go in there and you look at it and you're like, okay, what's that all about? This is the outside air dampers, economizer dampers on a rooftop air handler, and this was a cold day and the building was in cooling and the economizer dampers were shut. Something wasn't working correctly there. This is a duct run, and this is from our ECM list here. We have this one ECM that says minimize duct static pressure losses, enlarging duct and ducting and optimizing fittings. Well, this isn't an optimized fitting. This is the sheet metal contractor running his duct, getting near the end and realizing, whoop, I'm 8 inches off, left, right. And, you know, and if this is in a critical duct run, this kind of a transition, you know, it's got a significant energy impact. Okay, Glenn's telling me I need to rush. I'm just about done. just a motor that didn't meet its high performance specifications. That's the nameplate. This one is an underfloor air plenum that was leaking. It wasn't sealed up. So, you know, these underfloor air distribution systems, they pressurize an underfloor plenum and air comes out of the diffusers. If you've got big holes in the plenum, you're going to be using a lot more fan energy to dump that air where it doesn't need to be. An occupancy sensor next to this piece of artwork. So when the diffusers are, you know, when the air is running, this thing shakes. The occupancy sensor thinks there's people there. The lights are on all the time. This was a piece of wood stuck in a motor starter to jam it on so that it stays running. The fan's running all the time so that it couldn't be shut off when nobody's there. I'm not sure why that happened, but interesting one. This is an outside air sensor that was in direct sunlight, so it's not reading correctly. This was another, you know, this was the design intent, one of the energy measures. This is a metal building roof. The typical construction is they drape the bad insulation over the purlins. They screw the roof down on top of it. Very poor insulating qualities. You get these big gaps right here where the insulation is crushed down. So this was the ECM that everybody agreed to, and, you know, we even had a little picture of it. It got into design. Well, this is a picture of the construction of the building. This is what happened, what went in. This is a building where they had a lot of spaces where they weren't going to put any air conditioning. They weren't meeting their load, so now they're starting to stick window shakers in all around. That's going to add to the energy use. Spot coolers in the same building. Hopefully this is just a temporary thing. Same building. There was a pretty good-sized kitchen, cafeteria in there, and they didn't include any of that gas, dishwashing, anything in the energy model. So obviously that's not going to perform too well. This one, poor daylighting controls. This is a theme that we see again and again. And I mean, two things about this. One is it's an energy waste, and two is it just looks bad. When you get these spaces that where there's 100-foot candles of ambient light and the lights are on, we're trying to be models of energy efficiency, and having that really doesn't, I don't think it makes a good visual for the program. And there's a bunch of pictures just like that. All this light and these lights are on. You know, it's just something that we see it all the time. Here's a photocell. You can't see it too well, but that's the shield on the photocell. It was right over the photocell. I slid it down to see if it would work, but that's the way it was. It had been commissioned and everything, and it was up there like that. Another space that's very well daylit with all the lights on, and another one there. This one actually, and they'll probably, this one is still in progress of shakeout, and we're going to get this fixed. But this has a good measure in here. These are louvers for natural ventilation. These are classrooms. These are manual louvers, and there's a little transom above the door that's manual, and then there's louvers like this in the windows in the classroom at night. Every night, somebody comes around, manually opens all these, opens those in the classroom, flushes it out, closes them the next morning. Another poor daylighting control. And I believe that's it, and let's let Glenn go, and then if you guys have any more questions, because I don't want to steal all his time. Thank you. You want the laser?
Sure. You can be my clicker.
No, you want me to do it?
No.
Well, good job. I'm not going to be able to talk as quick as Mike, so I might run a little slow. Okay, I want to get a sense of what people's interests are. How many designers or consultants do we have here? Okay. And of those engineers, architects? We got architects, okay. Engineers, mainly engineers. How about building owners? Okay. How about building operators? No building operators. All right. Well, I'm going to try to highlight some case studies and the technologies we've used in some of these buildings. There's some innovation that I think is worth sharing. First of all, I want to establish a benchmark. Of the building owners, do you have an idea of how many, what your energy index or your benchmark is? Does anybody got an idea of what you would say your best building is running at? Okay, so I'm going to try to establish a goal for this exercise here. And this is actually our building. It's an old ratty building that was probably built in the 50s. It was an old grocery store that was converted. And you can see the fleet of hybrids there. Little PV. But it's basically a box, and a couple, we have a DDC system, and one of the things we do is we cycle on the perimeter lights to harvest daylighting. So the prior screen was the lights were on because it was dark, and now lights, sun's come up, and we've got those perimeter lights off. So it's a little energy savings we do. Here's the north part of the building. As you can see, it's just masonry. It's probably got an equivalent of an R3, R4 walls. It does have an R19 lid. Single pane, some double pane windows. But here's that north view with the lights off. There's actually really good daylight coming in on that side. Here we have the south side of the building. As you can see, there's quite a glare from these windows here. And what we find during real bright days, people put down the blinds because there is too much direct sunlight coming in on the south side. So, you know, we play around with the daylighting. Here we have HVAC layout. These are simple systems. A lot of bigger systems would have VAV, a common system with reheat boxes for the different zones. Here we actually have a morning screen where the building core is satisfied. This is a graphical display of green is good. You've met your temperature set point. Blue is getting close, and red, you're out of comfort. And as you can see, this is the north exposure. This is south exposure. That's where all those windows were. It takes those zones longer to warm up. And with the simple system, you're bringing in that, this is the zone that needed to warm up. As you can see, the heat's on, fan's running, heat's on, and we're providing 112 degrees, but it's still 63 degrees. So we're bringing that air back and returning it and get it, that zone warmed up. As far as, here's our electrical profile in the building for about 5 years. As you can see, these are cooling degree days. This is electrical. So when it's hot out, you get high cooling degree days. Our electrical spikes up for AC. And then there's this little winter peak that comes up because I think we use the lights more. So it's repeated. Here's that little winter bump, and it goes up. But here we have a winter peak that rises, which is unusual. But if you look at the cooling load, we did something right here because we had fairly high cooling loads, but the actual AC didn't increase like these previous years. So if you look at this up here, again, we've got wintertime load that's almost approaching the AC season. I presented this, asked why to guys that kind of track this, and they said that we actually had a remodel occurring during the winter. And burning in lights, people had equipment on, they were on weekends catching up. So that caused that increase. Remodel's done. Look what we did this last summer. It's almost hard to believe.
Yeah.
I want to see if it's repeatable next year. But we have pretty aggressive temperature set points. I think we run around 76 degrees.
You get issued a slur?
Yeah, well, no, we come in shorts in the summertime. Here's the gas use. Heating degree days is the lighter line. Here, clearly, we were wasting some energy out here, but, you know, our patterns are good in the last couple of years. Here's the overall energy use. So my claim is even this old ratty building, we're going to be approaching 45,000 BTUs per square foot a year. So let's see what some of these other buildings that we've done through SEED are achieving. Here's the PSU Native American Center. And it's a kind of a social area for the Native American students on campus. And they've got a large gathering space, classrooms, conference rooms. And let's...
You're putting your finger in front of it.
I guess I am. Okay, this is north, This is south. These are some classrooms in here. This is the gathering space. These are some light wells and actually venting for natural daylight. Here's the back view. There's actually a walk. You can come up these stairs, walk up on this area. It's an eco roof. And then this surface, which this is DOE 2 model, this surface is actually underground. So it's kind of bunkered in a little bit, reducing the thermal loads. Has anybody seen this building?
We actually came out and did a measurement in the space to compare how the energy is being used now, knowing that the building's actually operating a little bit of a monitor.
Right, right.
But I'd love to hear your comments.
Well, we're going to go through it. So here we had some natural ventilation. Have enhanced mass to complement that natural ventilation. There's no mechanical cooling because it's essentially VE'd out. There's some thought of adding cooling in now. The building program was basically to accommodate the students. What they're finding is as they operate, the university can rent the space because it's a nice space. So they're looking at revenue for summertime rental, and it's probably going to require them to convert the building to cooling. They are trying to do more aggressive night flush and see if they can get better comfort throughout the summer days. Demand control ventilation is well insulated, eco roof, efficient lighting, and daylighting. So here's that north exposure. Here's the teepee. Here's the vents and windows. Here's a picture of the eco roof that, through that walkway. Oh, it's a beautiful building. Here's the entrance to the gathering space. And here's the gathering space. So you can see there's daylight on both sides of the space. Light coming through the teepee skylight. And here's the skylight. The reason I have it is, you can't really see, but these lights are on. You can see the reflection. Some of these areas. Here's the controls for natural ventilation. And the DDC system allows the system based on outside air to allow the owners to throw a switch and go into the natural ventilation mode. And there's issues of occupant training on getting this system to work. So here's the actual performance of this building. Here's the energy, the code model, what was predicted by the energy study, and we're quite a bit higher. So, if you look at this, there's a good reason why this is higher. I've been through the building, and as part of our post-occupancy, if we come into a building and we see the numbers high, we try to essentially do an energy audit as we walk through. Well, as you looked at those slides, there were a lot of areas that had abundance of daylight. And so some of the recommendations we came up with was occupancy or daylighting. Use the low voltage controller, lighting controller that they have, get a signal into it and take those lights out on sunny days. They had rooms that didn't have occupancy sensors. So it was almost a post-project energy audit. The big the CO2 sensor. The CO2 sensor wasn't actively controlling the minimum air. It wouldn't drive down the minimum air below the code occupancy for 110 people in the room. So they were going to reprogram it and get that occupancy or the CO2 sensor to actually drive down the minimum air and save energy. But the big culprit on this was in this peak here. Is associated with a winter. The building, they smoked the building and air came out from everywhere. They never, when they did the balancing, they never could get the building to hold pressure. Well, once they smoked it, they have a video of it, you could just see smoke leaving the building. So it's essentially 100% outside air because they're not getting return. So that's really driving up their gas use. So this is a good example of not achieving it, but there's good reasons why, and they're on a path of implementing those fixes And sealing up the building is a tough one. They don't know how they're going to go about that one.
So how do you deal with this from a commissioning standpoint? My understanding is that where the wall and the ceiling came together, the flashing was put on incorrectly. And essentially, what was supposed to go up the roof to provide ventilation there actually just was going into space. That's not something that commissioning would have taught.
Well, if it's in the commissioner's scope of work, is anybody a commissioner here?